This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Social psychologists have found that people unknowingly hold stereotypical views about other social groups. But does that mean that we're hardwired to harbor racial biases? And can racial prejudice be unlearned? Researchers have studied racism in laboratories all around the globe to answer those questions. In today's installment of our series on race, we'll explore the science of racism with John DeVideo, a professor of psychology at Yale University, and Keith Payne, assistant professor of psychology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Gentlemen, welcome to News and Notes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John, let me begin with you. Are we programmed to hold stereotypical beliefs and attitudes about other social groups?
We're programmed to see other people in terms of their group membership and the group categories, because the world is so complex that we can't treat everybody as an individual and something brand new. So we have some basic needs to simplify the world, and stereotyping is based on group membership is one of those ways that we fundamentally do that.
Maybe we should, before we go forward, Keith, define some terms here. Racism, since that's something we're going to be talking about quite a bit during our conversation today. What exactly is it? If I see a white person on the street and I say, oh, I don't like that person because they're white, is that a racist reaction because of the way I've just described it?
Well, most psychologists would say that that kind of dislike reaction, we would call that a prejudice. That's a negative reaction to somebody based on the group that they belong to. You could go further. A stronger version of that dislike might be called racism, because it's not just based on group membership, but based on some idea of some biologically essential version of race. But prejudice is what social psychologists often focus on when they're talking about simply a dislike of somebody because of their group membership.
So, John, if I were to say the converse of that, that Asian people are smart, or they're good at math, or they're good at science, or they're good at engineering, is that racism also in reverse?
Well, I'm going to be like Keith there and say that if not so much racism but stereotyping,
mm-hmm.
because what you're doing is you're associating certain qualities or characteristics to the group, but even though they may be positive characteristics, you're denying the individuality and differences that occur in that group, and pigeonholing them in a certain way. So that would be stereotyping.
All right. Now, much of the research around the science of racism revolves around implicit and explicit racial bias, and we're going to be referring to both explicit and implicit bias throughout this interview. Keith, explain the difference between them, will you?
Right. Well, explicit racial bias is what you get when you use when you ask somebody to report what their attitudes are. So if you ask people, what do you think about white people? What do you think about black people? And you give them a questionnaire measure, for example, and measure how favorable or unfavorable their attitudes are, that's explicit prejudice or explicit attitudes, because you're asking people to reflect on their beliefs and directly express them to you. Now, implicit bias or implicit prejudice is something that happens more automatically or spontaneously when thoughts or feelings occur to somebody. They may not reflect on them, and they may not report them to you on a questionnaire whenever you ask them to reflect about them. But nonetheless, using various laboratory techniques, we can measure people's spontaneous reactions in a way that tells us something about their racial attitudes, even though they wouldn't report it explicitly.
So, John, is one more common than the other? One bias more common than the other?
Well, what we found is that the explicit attitudes, which are the ones that you self-report, you talk about, you know you have, they're conscious, have become much less biased and negative over time, you know, particularly since the civil rights legislation. However, the implicit biases seem to be much stronger. So we find that about 80% of whites say they're not prejudiced explicitly, but about 60 to 70% of them have these negative implicit biases.
Now, that was the study that you did in 2002, wasn't it?
Well, that's one of the studies leading up to that 2002 study.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, because you measured explicit and implicit racial attitudes among 40 white college students in 2002, and the mm-hmm. results showed that there were some big differences in the way that black and white participants perceived their interactions. Explain it to us as simply as you can.
Okay. There were some fundamental differences, but the way you can think about this is that whites, when they're interacting with a person of color, have access to their conscious attitudes and try to control their behavior to mirror those conscious attitudes. And that's typically our verbal behavior, which we can control. So what we found was the people who, most whites have these positive explicit attitudes and the negative implicit attitudes. And that means most whites were able to control their verbal behavior in a very positive way towards a black person. The implicit attitudes, which are much more spontaneously expressed, as Keith mentioned, often gets translated into our nonverbal behaviors. And therefore, our nonverbal behaviors of whites in these interactions tend to be negative. Here's the problem, as simply as I can state it. Because whites have access only to their conscious and controllable and behaviors that they can easily monitor, like their verbal behaviors, they would think that everything was going wonderfully in that interaction, that they thought they were behaving in a good, non-prejudiced way. Blacks in that same interaction don't have access to whites' explicit or implicit attitudes. All they have access to is our behaviors.
Now, why is that? Let me stop you to ask. Why do you say that?
Well, because our attitudes are feelings about a member of another group. And we can't read other people's minds about what people are thinking and feeling. So we base our impressions on somebody else, not so much on their intentions, because we don't know their intentions. We base it on what they do.
Now, I want to make sure that I'm clear with this.
Sure.
Am I understanding you to say that white people have an ability to see or sense how we feel as blacks, but we don't have that same ability to sense how they may be feeling?
I would say it the other way around. I would say that whites tend to judge the way things are going based on whites' own impressions, whites' own intentions of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, they would focus mainly on themselves and their feelings and the behaviors that they're engaging in that are easily monitorable, like their verbal behavior. What they don't base it on is the implicit attitudes, which they don't know they have, or their nonverbal behavior, which they don't know that they're emitting. The black person, on the other hand, in these interactions, hears the white person say positive things, but sees nonverbal behaviors that indicate anxiety or even dislike towards them. And what we find is where the whites base their impressions on how things are going on the verbal behavior that's positive, blacks dismiss the verbal behavior and focus on the negative nonverbal behaviors that are related to the negative implicit attitudes.
Keith, let me bring you back in and ask you this, because this is one of those kinds of conversations that takes place all the time in bars, in kitchens, in psychology courses across America. But how can you actually, legitimately, realistically quantify and measure these kinds of attitudes in a way that is accurate and can be used as a source of as a resource for figuring out how to make the 2, 3, 4 races, whatever you want to say, come together?
Well, there's a lot of research that goes on in psychology labs and other kinds of labs aimed at answering exactly that question. How can we measure these things in a way that we can quantify them and make sure that they're accurate and valid? And a number of different tests have been developed. Most of these are computer-based tests in which you present the test takers with pictures or words of various kinds presented on the computer screen and measure their reactions in various ways, be that whether they say something is pleasant or unpleasant, or looking at their reaction times to respond to those items on the computer screen. And then we validate those by seeing whether they predict people's behavior. And I can tell you more about the details if you want.
Well, I'm going to ask you to do that. In fact, I'm going to make reference to one of the studies that you did. But first, let me tell our audience that you are listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Farai Tudeha. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the science of racism. And we are talking about it with John DeVitio, professor of psychology at Yale University, and Keith Payne, assistant professor of psychology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Keith, let's talk about Barack Obama for a moment. His bid for the White House really forced Americans to confront their attitudes towards race, and your lab conducted a study on President-elect Obama's likelihood for success in the campaign. As I understand it, your findings were that he was likely to lose by 6 percentage points, not lose, but lose 6 percentage points based on race alone. Now, did that happen, and how are you able to determine if, in fact, that did happen?
Right. Well, obviously, there's only one election, and so only one outcome actually happened, right? And we know the results of that outcome were that President-elect Obama won in the end by a margin of about 6% in the popular vote. What this study showed was that, first of all, if you measure people's explicit and implicit prejudice, both predicted willingness or unwillingness to vote for Obama. So people who were higher in prejudice, both on explicit measures and on implicit measures, said they were less willing to vote for Obama, and this was done several weeks prior to the actual election. Now, what you can do with a statistical simulation using those findings is estimate if prejudice were at zero, how many people would be voting for Obama, and how many people, given whatever level of prejudice they have on those tests, say they're willing to vote for Obama. And the statistical models predict that had prejudice not existed, had it been at zero, Obama would have won by an additional 6 points more than he did. So it's not the case that the study predicted that Obama would lose by 6 points, simply that the amount of prejudice that is out there in American society may have cost him up to 6 points beyond what vote he actually
received. That he actually got. So, John, let me ask you this. Can racial biases be unlearned?
Yeah, the way to think about this is that particularly these implicit biases are habits of mind. They're things that have been associated with race all your life, and in our society, which historically has had racist traditions and is characterized by racial disparities, we develop these automatic associations with people of color that are more negative than the associations with whites. So they become habitual ways of thinking. And they're like habits. What you have to do to get rid of a habit is to, first of all, be aware that you have the habit. That's why it becomes really important to make people aware that these negative implicit attitudes exist, because if we don't know we have them, we're not going to work to get rid of them.
I'd like to follow that with this. We are in a multicultural society in America, and in fact, our show is going to be doing a series on that very soon. Is using whites and blacks as the models for this kind of study, is it relevant in a multicultural society, Keith?
Well, I think studying attitudes toward blacks and whites is continually relevant in America because of our history in which the white-black divide has been obviously very central. But studies really aren't limited only to studying whites and blacks, and I think they are moving more and more in that direction toward measuring attitudes toward many different ethnic groups.
Are you finding in the studies that have been done so far that there are any notable or significant differences in the attitudes of blacks or whites or Asians or Latinos?
Well, in general, there's a tendency toward each ethnic group to have the most favorable reactions to its own group and less favorable reactions to anybody who's not their own group. And so one way to think about it is that it's not about whites' attitudes per se or blacks' attitudes themselves. It's about how people define themselves in terms of who's in my group and who's not.
I'd like to go back to Obama for a moment, if I might, John, and it's this. There's been a lot written and said about his presidency being a bellwether in terms of changing racial attitudes in America. Is there anything to suggest from the empirical evidence that you have, although it's early, that this is already the case?
Well, I think, let me say this. It's going to be complicated because remember that whites tend to operate on the basis of sort of the most obvious or explicit kinds of demonstrations. And one of the dangers of this is that I think many whites are declaring Obama's election as the end of racism in America. And they see it as indicative that race is no longer a problem. And as Keith mentioned, the fact that he won doesn't mean that racism doesn't exist, because it could have reduced the number of people who voted for him. In the long run, though, you know, if we can understand that racism still exists and that we still need to be better as individuals and as a society, the kind of symbolic contact we're going to have with Barack Obama repeatedly, remember we talked about this as positive associations are the basis of these implicit attitudes, that if we can continue to associate positive things with blacks, that can help overwrite and override some of the negative prejudices that people have into the future.
I've got about 30 seconds for you, Keith, for the last answer. I'm assuming that having a person like Barack Obama, who is multiracial, multicultural, in the White House provides a wonderful laboratory for you and the work that you are studying.
That's right. I mean, it provides a way to get outside the laboratory, too, and look at how the things that we study in the laboratory tell us about decisions out there in the world, like voting decisions, like public opinion. And just to follow on what John was saying, the research does show that having positive role models is one way to change the associations that people have, and it's very well possible that a President Obama could serve as that positive role model.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both very much. Very interesting information.
Thank you very much.
That was John DeVideo, a professor of psychology at Yale University, and Keith Payne, an assistant professor of psychology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.